9.5 minutes after 7 o'clock. Good morning. You're tuned to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Well, both Senator Barack Obama and Senator John McCain, the presumptive nominees of their various parties, are on the campaign trail, and this week seems to be the week to talk about the economy. Remember that old Clinton campaign slogan, it's the economy, stupid? Well, here we are 16 years later, and it's still the economy. I'll leave out the stupid part. And so we're going to spend this hour today talking about the economy. I know it's not good, but stick with us. We'll try to make this as palatable as we can. But not just the economy, but we'll be talking about the economy in terms of how the candidates are using this as a campaign issue and the differences in their approaches to the economy. Because one thing that both candidates agree on is that they disagree on their economic approach. And we're going to talk about that. With you and with our guest. I want to get phone numbers because I would like to hear from our listeners as soon as you want to call in. 800-642-1234, toll free. 800-642-1234, toll free. In Madison, it's 263-1890, 263-1890. The email address is talk@wpr.org. I want to welcome as my guest this hour, Van Mobley, Associate Professor of History and Economics at Concordia University in Wisconsin. He's also a trustee in the Village of Thanesville. And, well, first of all, welcome. Good morning.
Good morning, John. It's good to be here.
And I understand that you've had a kind of a tough time with water over in your neck of the woods as well.
We haven't been hit as hard as Waukesha. We're in Ozaukee County. We haven't been hit as hard as some of the other counties, but we're on the Milwaukee River, and it has flooded. And I would like to thank all the village employees. They've really done a lot of work, and the people of Thanesville have, as they always do, come together to help one another out.
Okay, well, thanks to you for joining us this morning, and I appreciate your time. We'll try to make the most of it. Let's face it, the economy's in the tank, right?
It is. I think that certainly we've hit what they would call a slow spot. I know the economy only grew 1% last year, and it's either not going, my view is, well, you always have to wait and see, but I think it's either not growing, it may even be shrinking a little at the current time.
Well, if this is the combination of things that we have going here, the dollar is falling, and you have high energy and food prices, so you've got some inflation happening anyway, and at the same time, consumer spending is falling off because everybody has suddenly woken up and realized how much debt they have. Boy, that's a pretty powerful stew.
It is a powerful stew, and it's very hard to address with the, particularly given the national debt that we already have and the deficits we've been running, it's very hard to address with the normal monetary or fiscal policy tools that the federal government likes to use. There are no, you have to throw out the book. We're in an environment that we don't have easy and obvious answers to some of these questions, or at least we don't have the answers that we've used in the past.
Well, that brings me to my next question. I mean, whoever becomes the next president is going to have some pretty tough tasks to manage. And how much can the president or the Congress actually do to fix the economy?
Well, they're limited, I would say, to some extent. I'd go back and say one thing. One of the things that you always want to help you to manage the economy is the Federal Reserve. And the Federal Reserve is pretty much out of bullets and actually may be contributing a lot to our problem now.
Explain that.
Well, normally whenever you go into an economic downturn, you expect the Federal Reserve to cut interest rates in response. That sort of allows people to have more to borrow some money, maybe do a little spending they wouldn't do, sort of stimulates the economy on the upside. The problem is now, whenever the Federal Reserve cuts interest rates, they've sparked a little bit of inflation. And the inflation is just as damaging as the recession that we were in, and maybe actually exacerbates it. So they can't do anything to stimulate the economy. And in fact, they may, by stimulating the economy, they actually harm it. That feeds into the inflation that you were talking about earlier with the cost of food and energy.
Now, as I understand it, when the Fed sets its interest rate, that's the interest rate that the banks use between each other and so forth. That really doesn't doesn't affect the interest rate that you and I get when we go to the bank to borrow money for a house, or when we get a new credit card or something like that. That's tied to some other number, isn't it?
I think that the Fed's setting the interest rate for the interbank loans, or actually setting a target price. They don't directly set it, but they attempt to influence. I do believe that it feeds over and it has an impact on interest rates that people pay. It's not a direct impact, but it certainly influences it strongly.
Okay, well, we've established kind of an overview here. We're going to take a break and check the weather around the state to see how much rain we're going to get. On top of what we've already had. And then when we come back, we're going to start to kind of separate the two presidential candidates in terms of their positions on the economy. And we have some sound clips we're going to play that illustrate kind of where the candidates are. We'll take your calls as well at 800-642-1234 and 263-1890 and your emails at talk@wpr.org. I'm John Munson. You're tuned to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. 17 after 7. Here's what's coming up later on today on the Ideas Network. Why put off tomorrow until tomorrow what you can do the day after tomorrow? After 2 on Talk of the Nation, procrastination. That's coming up after 2 o'clock today here on the Ideas Network. Well, this hour we're talking about the economy, and particularly how that plays in the race for the president of the United States, which is, in case you haven't noticed, we're in the middle of presumptive nominees, and both parties are on the campaign trail, and they're talking about the economy. The economy is on everyone's mind because it's bad. We don't think about it so much when the economy is going well. But times like now, it becomes a front and center issue. Both candidates have addressed it. They've taken shots at each other. And we're going to talk about their various positions on the economy. You can call in and join us at any time, 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. We have nearly full phone banks, not quite. So you still have a chance to get in. 263-1890 if you're calling for Madison, 263-1890. And if you get a busy signal, well, jump on the computer, send us an email, talk@wpr.org. My guest this hour is Van Mobley, Associate Professor of History and Economics at Concordia University in Wisconsin, and he is a trustee of the Village of Thienesville. We do have some people who want to join us by phone. Let's start with Dwayne from Hillsboro. Dwayne, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I remember when Pat Buchanan was running for president, and he says that NAFTA and GAFTA and all these, this free trade was the worst thing that could ever happen for the American people and the working force. And I believe that came to be true. As far as the candidates, at least Obama is talking about reviewing some of these ridiculous trade policies, where McCain is going to continue to go the path. And Obama has been saying that the lobbyists will have to find a new home. I, with a lot of other people, feel that the lobbyists have wrote our trade policies for the last 8 years. Thank you, and I'll take a comment off the air.
Thanks for that call, Dwayne. Well, free trade certainly is going to be an issue in the campaign, Professor, as the candidates have staked out conflicting positions on that issue.
Yes, it will be. If you notice, I remember back when Hillary and Barack Obama came through the state in the primary system during the primaries, they certainly talked about trade. And I looked them up actually on their website last night. Obama claims that he will review NAFTA. And he wants to make sure that in any future trade agreements that our labor and environmental laws are extended to other countries that would like to be our trading partners. And one of the things that neither Obama nor McCain does talk about very much is they don't talk about our trade relationship with China. My view is, I understand some of the concerns that people have voiced about NAFTA. My view is the problem within our trading relationships is primarily with China. And also with our over-reliance on foreign oil, which is a trade problem in many ways. And neither one of the candidates say much about China, although they would like to have them, I guess, maybe adopt some more of our standards. But both of them seem to suggest that they would like energy independence. And in fact, if you have energy independence, that means you're going to abandon, to some extent, the policy of free trade. Or you turn the United States into an energy exporter. They haven't really fleshed out those stances yet, but I certainly look forward to them doing so further on in the campaign.
Wisconsin is a swing state. How big an issue do you think NAFTA or free trade in general is going to be here in Wisconsin?
I think that it it moves some particularly blue-collar union households, and insofar as that will affect the outcome, then I think it's an important policy. If I were advising John McCain, I would advise him to show a little bit of flexibility on this issue. I know that the classic Republican Republicans in these days are associated closely with free trade, but I would point out to people that Ronald Reagan, in fact, intervened into trade issues. For example, we wouldn't have Harley-Davidson today if he hadn't tinkered with the trade laws at that time to help Harley out.
The one of the issues that the candidates have sparred over, and this actually happened during the while there was still a race in the Democratic side between Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama, it's now become an issue between Barack Obama and John McCain, and that is the so-called gas tax holiday. John McCain still likes that idea, and Senator Obama doesn't. I've got some. Well, let's listen to John McCain's take on the gas tax holiday here first.
$30, some say. $30 means nothing to a lot of economists. I understand that. It means a lot to some low-income Americans. I've already talked to several of them.
So John McCain talking there, actually talking about the gas tax holiday. The estimates were it would save the average family about $30. Economists in general have poo-pooed the idea, and I know that Senator Obama has repeatedly said this is a stunt. Here's what he had to say.
You're looking at suspending a gas tax for 3 months. The average driver would save 30 cents per day for a grand total of $28. That's assuming that the oil companies don't step in and raise prices by the same amount that the tax has been reduced.
So both of them focusing on how much the average driver would save. I haven't heard either candidate talk about how much money would be lost out of the Highway Trust Fund, which is already in serious trouble. And meanwhile, our roads continue to deteriorate. So what's your take on the gas tax? Political stunt, or is this something that really could help people?
I wouldn't call it a political stunt. I'd say it just provides a very small and limited amount of help. And so then you'd question if it's... I mean, it would provide some help, but, you know, whether it's worth doing or whatever. The more important point is it worth spending any political capital on? That's a judgment that everybody would make for themselves.
One of the things that I've heard about the gas tax holiday is that if you suddenly drop the price of gas by 30 cents a gallon, assuming that that would actually happen, and we have no way of knowing if that would in fact be the result, that all you're doing is driving up demand, and we're already at capacity in the refineries now. And part of the problem with price is scarcity, and so all we would be accomplishing would be to drive the prices even higher.
Well, that might be. I do know, though, the latest figures, I don't have them right at hand, but I was reading in an article the other day, I believe, the demand has actually begun to fall in the United States for gasoline. And I know, well, just talking to my mom, who lives down in Alabama. I've been here since 91, but my mom still lives down in Alabama where I grew up, and she had started to pinch her. She doesn't drive around as much as she used to, and she's complained to me about the cost of gas and food, for that matter, and so she drives less, and I think that that's beginning to happen, and also people are beginning to buy smaller cars and try to get out of their SUVs.
Well, I know that you certainly see a lot of large pickup trucks and SUVs parked along the road or in yards and in parking lots with for sale signs on them, and the actual value of those vehicles is dropping like a stone. Interesting, as GM is closing four plants that make the large trucks and SUVs, a GM plant that makes smaller, more fuel-efficient vehicles is adding a third shift. So there's, an example of the market at work.
I guess that is. It's painful, but I guess you would say that it's the market at work.
Let's take a call next from June in Shawano. June, good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning, John. Good morning, Professor.
Good morning.
Last night, our congressman, which is the 8th District, had a telephone talk around. And when he was questioned about the price of gas, he had several suggestions. The one which interested me was about speculation. He suggested that speculators who were betting on the price of gas going up or down should be forced to buy that gas or at least store it. And with the ramifications that would come about if they were forced to do that. What do you think of that? And is that interference in the market?
Is this Congressman Kagan that you're talking about?
Yes, sir.
There's oftentimes a lot of discussion of speculators and what they're doing. They're normally, I think what he's referring to, although I didn't hear his comments, is about speculators speculating in the futures market.
And they're speculating on margin.
Right. I would say that it's problematic if you get a lot of people with borrowed money speculating in which is what on margin is, and that's not good. And that can cause momentary disruptions and cause prices to oscillate to more than they otherwise would. Did he say anything about what he would like to? Oh, he would like to make them store it. Well, what happens is they get out of their position before they have to take possession. I used to work down at the Board of Trade, and they also speculate in wheat and grain futures down there instead of oil. But if you can't get out of a trade, let's say you buy a contract for 5,000 bushels of soybeans in October, and if I never then sold that contract to somebody else before October, they would come and dump it in your front yard, at least in theory. Everybody always sold by then, so they either took their profit or their loss. But I don't know how that's already the case in some theoretical level, but people will get out of them before they have to do that.
Well, there has been talk about changing the way that people can speculate in the oil market and forcing them to actually have the money up front if they're going to be buying these contracts or these futures, that they can't do it on margin. They actually have to show they have the money. That would tend to prevent some level of speculation, would it not?
It would certainly put a damper on it, and I also would just say, you know, I don't know why the banks would be lending money for this sort of thing, given the state they're in. Maybe we could have a little closer regulation of the banks.
We'll add that to our list of things to talk about when we come back after the news, and, of course, your calls and emails as well. 800-642-1234, the number to call to join the program. 800-642-1234. In Madison, it's 263-1890, 263-1890. The email address is talk@wpr.org. We're talking about the economy and the current political season. And you can join us right after the news. This is the Ideas Network. 7:35, you're tuned to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm John Munson in for Joy Cardine this week. My guest this hour is Van Mobley. He's the Associate Professor of History and Economics at Concordia University, Wisconsin. And the topic this hour is the economy. And particularly, we want to look at how the two candidates differ on various economic issues. And we haven't dealt with a lot of real specifics on that, except for we've talked about the gas tax holiday. But the two candidates really are quite a bit different in a number of respects on the economy. And we're going to try to focus on what might be termed a laundry list of issues in this half of the program. And you can join us to talk about any of those, such as, for example, the Bush tax cuts, whether they should be extended or not, capital gains tax, estate tax, corporate taxes, the alternative minimum tax, Social Security payroll taxes. We're going to talk about how the candidates differ on those. and some other things related to this presidential election. Well, Professor, we were talking about oil and so forth before the break, but I want to move on. Let's talk about how the candidates are on the topic of the Bush tax cuts. The Bush administration, of course, cut taxes with the approval of Congress. And at first, John McCain was opposed to those tax cuts. Now he wants to extend them. Meanwhile, Barack Obama says that, they could go away for anybody who makes more than $250,000. He wants to focus more tax relief on people who make less money than that. What about the Bush tax cuts?
Well, let's see. Their websites, which I took a look at just to make sure last night, I had them straight. Sometimes they change during a campaign, as you well know, and that's to be expected. That's one of the things that I know your callers know and you know is these presidents actually learn things, or these candidates learn things when they're out on the campaign trail, so they do adapt, and I don't really consider that an inconsistency unless it's too gross. I consider it growing. But certainly McCain wants to keep the current low income and investment tax rates. He also wants to propose a corporate tax rate cut. He thinks the corporate tax rate is too high. It's the second highest in the world, and he wants to bring it down. But he also wants to double the size of the child tax exemption, phase out the AMT. And on the estate tax, which is one of the things that sometimes go back and forth, his website says that he wants to keep it predictable and make it low. Now, in the Bush plan, it's scheduled to be completely phased out in 2011 or something, but by saying he wants to keep it predictable and make it low, I suspect that John McCain is probably angling to make an estate tax at some number and index it to inflation, so anything
15,
above 5 or 7 million.
Yeah, according to what I have in front of me, John McCain wants to exempt all estates worth less than 10 million. And the current ceiling is $1 million. And really, how many estates are there out there that are worth more than $1 million? You have to wonder about that. But then, in addition to exempting anything under $10 million, he wants to cut the estate tax rate to 15%. Meanwhile, let's see, Barack Obama wants to keep the estate tax at 2009 levels with a 45% rate and a $3.5 million exemption level, or $7 million for married couples. So differences there, both in the rate and in the level of exemption.
Right, okay. So that's one thing. Also, Obama says he wants to eliminate some corporate tax breaks. He wants to give some money in rebates and cut taxes for the lower tax burden people. He has a proposal, too, on the payroll tax. Obama does. I think he wants to maybe raise the cap, or at least talking about raising the cap. It's at about $100,000 now, I think.
Yeah, it's a little over $100,000. He wants to not only raise the cap, but provide a $500 credit, I believe, for certain lower income levels. I wasn't quite clear on that. I do have, let's see if I can get this mouse to move where I need it to go. Here's Barack Obama on his plan for the Social Security.
My plan to shore up Social Security in the face of 78 million baby boomers who are about to retire and join the system would keep taxes exactly the same for 97% of all taxpayers. 97% of all taxpayers would see no impact on their payroll tax.
So he's looking at getting any increases by extending the your exposure income-wise. Right now, only the first $100,000 or so dollars that you make is subject to the payroll tax, and he's thinking of raising that number. I haven't heard by how much. Well, here's what Senator McCain had to say about that.
He proposes to eliminate or drastically increase the Social Security's earnings cap. The Social Security earnings cap, small business people in this room are very familiar with, and that would dramatically increase the taxes on you and employers.
That was John McCain speaking before a small business group the other day. So big differences there. How would increasing the cap on the income exposed to Social Security taxes affect small business people? I wonder how many small businesses employ anyone making more than $100,000 a year.
Well, that would be the key, is how many of your employees make more than $100,000 a year. And if none of them make any more than $100,000 a year, then you won't see it. And if some of them do, then you will see it. It depends sort of, I guess, what the business you're in. Maybe I could see a small engineering company, perhaps. That's it. It just depends on what your payroll is.
Well, now, neither candidate has identified where any of these tax cuts are going to come from in terms of how they'll be paid for. One of the problems we're seeing that the federal government has, and some say this feeds our economic difficulties, is the huge deficits that the government is piling up. It's estimated in the next budget the deficit is going to be somewhere north of $400 billion or something like that, which would be a new record. How can the next president cut taxes and tackle the deficit problem at the same time?
John, are you sure you're not an economist? That's a pretty you nailed it right on the head.
I listen to a lot of economists. So.
Well, that might be a little dangerous. I think you hit it right on the head. They really don't talk about they talk about making some efficiencies and getting rid of some tax breaks. But they don't really get into very much specific about what they're going to do on the cost side, on the outlay side. That is a problem, and we can't afford to blow the deficit out anymore. Actually, I was looking at some numbers last night too on that. This year, or estimated next year, the deficit will be 4.7% of GNP, which is a pretty big number. No, wait a minute. Yep, that's right. That's a pretty big number, I think.
Well, and here's the thing. I guess the elephant in the room is, in terms of the federal budget, is the war in Iraq the global war on terror, the war in Iraq, and our activities in Afghanistan are costing billions of dollars every day, and it seems to be all off budget. It's always an extra appropriation, and it seems to like, okay, well, this doesn't count because we didn't put it in the regular budget. Man, I'll tell you, if I kept my books at home like that, I'd be in trouble in a hurry.
I think that you, they keep them off budget, but everybody knows what they are, so it is the elephant in the room. This is the way I think of it. I'm on a national level, you can see it on a personal level, and we will see it on a public level, I think, that one way or the other. You see everybody selling their big SUVs and buying a Chevy Cobalt or something like that. If you can imagine what government policy will look like when we go from an SUV to a Cobalt, you've got a good idea about what we're about to go through.
Or maybe a Yugo. Yeah, do they still make those? I don't know. We're just about at weather time. We're going to take a break here, and then we'll talk some more about the differences between Barack Obama and John McCain on various economic issues. They're going around the country talking about that, not being bashful about explaining trying to separate themselves in terms of economic issues. So far, we're still waiting to hear somebody say how they're going to pay for all the stuff they want to do. And hopefully somebody will come up with something. You can join us by phone if you'd like to join our conversation about the economy and what the candidates have to say about it. That's primarily what we want to focus on here. And you can join us at 800-642-1234, toll free. In Madison, it's 263-1890. And the email is talk@wpr.org. I'm John Munson in for Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Next hour, well, it takes a village or a town or a city to save the world. My guests after 8 say communities can band together to solve some of the biggest environmental problems facing the world today. We're talking about economic problems this hour here on the Ideas Network, and my guest is an economist, Van Mobley, Associate Professor of History and Economics at Concordia University, Wisconsin, and he's also a Thiensville trustee. We've had some flooding down there as well. We're talking specifically in this half of the program about the differences between the two candidates on a variety of economic issues. We've covered the estate tax and the Social Security payroll tax, the Bush tax cuts, and so forth, and we've addressed a little bit the problem of the deficit. Here's one thing we haven't, well, we mentioned it, but we didn't go into specifics. John McCain's proposal for the corporate tax is to cut the current tax rate from 25% from 35%. Barack Obama plans to close corporate tax loopholes, but I don't see anywhere where those are identified. Just in general, Professor, looking at the two candidates, John McCain, this is what we've come to expect in terms of traditional supply-side economics from the Republicans, and Barack Obama is going back to some very traditional Democratic themes, tax fairness and a little bit of income redistribution through tax policy and so forth. Any idea how those things are really going to play out in the hustings, so to speak? I know one of the things that we are hearing a little bit of from both candidates is kind of a populist message. Talk about that a little bit, if you would, please.
Yeah, we are developing a populist message. I know, actually, going after some corporate CEOs and lobbyist types, I know that John McCain had been beaten up a little bit a few months ago about that he had some lobbyists in his campaign, and just some news this morning, or what happened yesterday, what is the guy's name? Jim Johnson, who used to be the CEO of Fannie Mae, sort of at least tangentially and maybe even intimately associated with a lot of these mortgage crisis business. Jim Johnson had been appointed to be on Obama's to chair the committee that was helping Obama select the vice president. He was really scalded for his association with the mortgage industry. And Obama showed him the door, which actually is a vigorous and populist message in some ways. Maybe he made a mistake appointing the guy to begin with, but then he quickly got rid of him when he saw that he wasn't doing him any good.
In that case, I believe the trouble was over some loans from Countrywide, which is one of the troubled mortgage lenders, and apparently there had been some loans made there.
That's right, and one of the, and you know, we're talking about the... But both of them have a sort of a populist tone. Both of them have been critical of CEOs. I think that message certainly resonates with the population. And I think, you know, as Barack Obama also has some things about, he seems to have a more vigorous platform right now for handling the mortgage crisis. He certainly proposes a number of things to help people with their mortgages. Neither one of them have really taken a stance yet, although I expect they'll have to, on regulating banks, the Federal Reserve, which has clearly played a role in this crisis, how we're going to sort of mop up the financial system and move forward. But both of them will have to wade into it as the season goes on.
Well, you know, a lot of people toss around ideas like, well, we need to let the market do what the market does, and that way we'll all be better off. Do most people really understand that means if we're going to just, you know, deregulate financial interests and let the market do what the market does, that we're in for a lot of big peaks and big valleys, both? I think a lot of people are used to the fact that the government has kind of, over the past century, has intervened to kind of prevent some of that and to even out the market and maybe flatten it out a little bit. The highs aren't so high, but then the lows weren't so low either. If the market is going to be the sole controller of everything, then you're going to have to be willing to take the bad with the good, and maybe isn't that what we're seeing?
Well, John, that's part of it. Although I'll let my biases out on the table. I'm very disappointed in the Fed, and the Fed. A lot of times, some big Wall Street guys, not to be too populist myself, but there are a lot of big Wall Street guys who say, "Let the market work until they get in a bind," and then they want the Fed to alter all kinds of rules.
Exactly.
Exactly, and I don't think the American people want any more of that.
Yeah, if you want to have the playing field without any rules and no referees, and you can do whatever you like, then you have to. You know, there are some candidates. I'm not going to name any names who talk a lot about personal responsibility. But what happens when some of these companies get themselves into a bind? Well, you know, I guess maybe it's a double standard. Let's take a call. I think Linda in Monroe has something on a related topic to that. Linda, go ahead.
Good morning, John. Good morning, Professor. Now, on the economy, Senator Obama wants to tax the hedge fund dealers. And a couple of days ago, I was reading the Wall Street Journal, and that's all they were talking about was derivatives and hedge funds. Now, Moody's lowered the bond ratings on the investment bankers who were in hedge funds selling those worthless derivatives. Now, I feel that there should be some regulations on hedge funds and derivatives, and that the media is soon going to have to start talking about the subject. Otherwise, the value of the dollar is going to fall to zero.
Linda, I think that you're right. I agree with you. For what it's worth, I think Barack Obama has. I don't want to go down that road. But I will say this: both candidates receive money from hedge funds. That's not necessarily bad. Not from people involved in hedge funds. That's not necessarily bad. And I expect people in all walks of life to contribute to political campaigns.
Well, I've listened to economists, but I don't know that I was paying attention when they explained what hedge funds were. Why don't you enlighten me and our audience?
Well, a lot of times what hedge funds are basically they're a fund that starts with a pool of capital, and so some equity, for example, and then they get loans from banks and other institutions, and then they attempt to pursue a number of strategies, sometimes market trading strategies, sometimes maybe in speculating in oil, and they use their pool of borrowed and then equity capital, and normally they have a lot more borrowed capital than equity capital, to make money. It's a financial... It's problematic, and they haven't been regulated. It's sort of a new development of late, but they will be, I believe, and I think... problematic to do it, but we're going to have to do it, and that's why I think Barack Obama and Senator McCain have not taken positions yet on that, but I do expect them to.
Let's take a caller. George in Egg Harbor joins us. George, good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, I've got a question or maybe a comment that I'd like your guest to comment on. If I was running, the country as a business, certainly one of the things I would look for a source of money when things are tight like they are now, is our whole the whole bill on military spending, and not just the Iraq War, Afghanistan War, but I mean in today's world and technology, just the whole amount of money we're spending on the defense. And I would think there could be a big reduction there that could pay for a lot of things. And, for instance, it would be very interesting, and I haven't heard anyone talk about what the cost, how much oil does the military spend. I heard a number the other day that we were like billion barrels of oil a year that we use in this country. And I guess, they were talking about drilling in Alaska, and that wouldn't really make that big of a difference at all. But I wonder how much the military uses. And to me, that's the biggest place we could go to get money for all the programs we're trying to do and all the balancing we're trying to do. I mean, it's a huge number, and I think it's way out of whack from what the way the world looks today.
Thanks for that call. Appreciate it, George. Military spending headed for a reduction, do you think?
Well, let's see. We kind of briefly brushed on this a little bit earlier when we were talking about how they were going to get the money for both Obama and McCain proposed some tax cuts and, what they were going to do on the other side. The really big spending in the federal budget is on Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security payments, and the U.S. military. And the Medicare, the Medicaid, the Social Security payments, and it's non-discretionary spending. And the military, I think, is lumped in with the discretionary budget. But it's, we have to have some defense. The question is where you want to tag it. So, you know, they don't. Neither one of them are really talking about those, although those are the big budget items. I would say this about the military and the use of oil. And this goes back to another thing we talked about, energy policy. The truth of the matter is, if we want to be energy independent, or this is my view, so I'll take off that truth. If we want to be energy independent, what that really means is we want to turn ourselves back into what we were throughout much of the 20th century, which is an energy exporting country. And to do that, we really have to make a greater reliance on coal. And people don't like to talk about coal because it's dirty, but in the United States, we sit on a huge heap of it. And one of the interesting things that I would encourage our caller to look up is the military, in particular the Air Force, has begun some programs where they're, and they're squabbling in Congress about whether to let them do this or not, but the Air Force is trying to develop some plants that really take coal and turn it into jet fuel and other liquid fuels.
Oh, yes, coal gasification. Yeah, I have that I've heard of. You know what? I just realized we're having this great discussion. We're out of time. And so much more to talk about. But, Professor, I really appreciate you spending this hour with us. It's been very illuminating.
Oh, John, thank you. It's my pleasure.
Van Mobley, Associate Professor of History and Economics at Concordia University, Wisconsin. Want to thank all sorts of people, Rob Ferret and Karen Prager and Cynthia Schuster, for helping produce this morning's program, and more to come. Next hour, we'll talk about sustainability, kind of a nice segue there. I'm John Munson. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.